Good morning and welcome to the roundtable this morning. It's Friday. Doesn't it feel like a Friday? It's the 16th of October. It's a, I don't know about where you are. It's sort of spritzy here and kind of damp and dark, but we will certainly try to lighten the mood and bring a little light to things. All we have to do is, all you have to do to be in the conversation is go to roundtable at wamc.org. Listening to some music coming in from Blazing Saddles. Tonight, Mel Brooks will be at Proctor's and is going to be presenting Blazing Saddles. It's the movie was put out in 1974, so that's 42 years ago, 41 years ago. That's
you know, and you know a local man wrote that.
Absolutely. And so we're very excited, obviously, to have Mr. Brooks in town. So we'll
he's
be
one of my heroes.
Yeah, he may have been the best man ever to live.
I mean, he's just incredibly...
Well, then there's Anne Bancroft.
That's right. And then there's Anne Bancroft. And 89 years
and
old.
And they were married on Fire Island.
Yes. Yeah.
Did you guys know that?
No, I did not
I
know
was
that.
There. Mm-hmm. I was not at the wedding. Yeah, I was walking in the streets.
I thought you were invited.
No,
I thought you were, like through rights and all that. So let us introduce the panel, and then we will go on to help or go through all of these subjects and try to figure out what's going on in our world. Alan Chartek is here, of course. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. Let's go Mets.
Okay. And
except for Chicago.
Yeah, well, so you got Chicago. Well, we'll talk about that later. Okay, we got...
But let's make sure we do, because it's such an important subject. What with world peace and everything going on.
I wish world peace were
Yeah,
going
I was going to say, I missed that headline. Okay, Rosemary Armeo is here. She is University at Albany journalism professor, as well as an investigative reporter. She is also a frequent commentator here on the Roundtable, and we couldn't be more thrilled. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning, she commented.
And Barbara Smith is with us as well, essayist, author, editor, activist,
yay,
and joins us this morning and every Friday, and we thank you very much.
Thank you so much,
it's
Joe.
Great
hi,
to have
everybody.
You here. Hello, good morning. All right, so let's go into what is what's happening, and there's a lot of some interesting stuff. There weren't when I was looking through the stories last night, a lot of this, you know, obviously we had discussed yesterday, certainly the troop decision. But the president did make the official announcement yesterday and then started to catch a lot of flack from his own party, saying that this is a Nobel Peace Prize winning president of the United States who is now a warmonger.
Well, as I said yesterday, what was he going to do? Even the August New York Times endorsed his action. If he had said, we're going to let the Taliban or whatever take over and the bad guys take over and kill women and children over there and every day there's going to be a headline, what could he have done? I mean, and the Republicans would have had a field day with it, to be perfectly honest, and yelled and screamed that this is a feckless president who doesn't know how to defend the country. So it's a halfway measure. He says, okay, we'll keep 5,000 troops there as opposed to 1,000 troops. But I really don't think he had a choice.
That's true. It's a half measure, and we have become so embroiled in that region because of a series of half measures. What's needed is a clean start, and now Obama has made clear that the next president won't have a clean start. Like him, she will come in with troops already committed, and there are not enough troops to make a difference. We have not made any sort of no advance at all against ISIS, despite all the men, all the bombings. And the reason is, well, what is the reason? We haven't even looked at that. Why does training that makes American troops some of the best in the world, why doesn't it work when we give it to the Afghanistanis or the Iraqis? Why is it that ISIS, who are just as poor, just as uneducated as the people we're trying to train, how come they're such a great fighting force? Well, the answer has to do with ISIS. It has to do with the idea that we're representing something. That's why American soldiers are so great. We're defending America. That's what ISIS is doing.
Well,
we don't have anything like that to put our hopes and our training into.
But it's also that they don't play by the rules, right? I mean, we're still trying to be
We don't play by the rules if America is under attack. If we feel that people are coming in and attacking us, we do anything to get rid of them. And that's what ISIS is doing. And they know us well. I think they're playing against us well. I mean, decapitation makes us crazy. So they're doing that. They're burning people alive. Because then we...
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're not doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
and I'm not so sure...
torture, too. So, Joe, I can't even buy that. We just...
No,
we
I understand.
Just do ours more,
I understand.
More in more sophisticated ways. We waterboard instead of burn up somebody alive in a cage.
Well, the thing is, as far as ISIL is concerned, they have an ideology that drives them. That is a fanatical ideology. So there's that. And then, as you said, U.S. troops, often people are in the armed services because of their class status, and that's their avenue, to a better, life. I'm not saying they're not patriotic, but the thing is, I'm just talking about, why, who's in there and what perhaps are some of their motivations. And, but the thing is that the problem for me is that it's hard to fix things using the barrel of a gun. That's a problem. The dysfunction is that, we're going to solve all this violence with another
more
kind
violence.
Of...
And what would you do, Barbara? Barbara, what would you do right now? If you were the president, what would you do?
Oh, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking at a more global, philosophical, 30,000 feet level.
But we can all do that. My problem is that I'm trying to put myself into the place of the president sitting there with his advisors and trying to decide what it is that he has to do moving forward right now. We can all say, Bush never should have sent those troops in and this and that. Our resident wag, Tom wrote in and said, someone on the net called Afghanistan Vietnam 2.0. Now, that's pretty interesting. Now, in Vietnam, we got out. And we got out. I remember the helicopters going out off the top of the buildings and everybody holding on and the rest of it. We got out. And it turned out that the Vietnamese leadership was not the devil that had been portrayed by the United States.
Neither is ISIS, I'd like to say. I think they use horrible tactics, but they're tactics that are working for them.
See,
they are recruiting and bringing people to their cause. We have to get over this idea that they're evil, they're extremists. Didn't we feel that way about Japan during World War II?
Wait. And you call yourself a feminist?
I am a feminist.
Well, I know. And I admire that. But when they start beating up women in the street because they show an ankle or...
That's the Taliban, not ISIS.
Oh,
although they're all connected.
Wait a second.
I don't defend their policies against women. Of course I don't. But it is working in the context of what they're trying to do, build a caliphate in the Middle East and in Africa. And they're winning, and we are not. Partly it's because we don't want to commit. What would I do if I were president? I'd figure out if I wanted to win or not. And if you want to win, you need troops on the ground.
Well,
I don't think that would be supported.
So back to Tom in 2.0, Vietnam 2.0. We tried that. We sent 100,000 troops into Vietnam. It didn't work. And I have a feeling that the so-called caliphate that you're talking about wants us to come in with everything we got.
Sure, because we're the enemy, and it consolidates people in the Middle East. If we're the enemy, you fight against us and you consolidate together, just like what happened to us after 9/11. Why are we so rabid about Muslim extremists now because of 9/11? Of course they want the United States as an enemy. But what role are we playing?
Well, I still
what
haven't got...
What do we want?
I still haven't... with all due respect, Rosemary, and you know how much I respect you.
Here it comes.
With all due respect, I still don't know what you would do right now. Would you get out? Say goodbye? Let the women get whipped in the street? Let this kind of stuff happen?
Oh, please. We don't care about the women in the street. I wish we did. But the whole idea
people do.
We do not.
Yeah, well,
when we went into
do.
Afghanistan, supposedly because women there were subjugated, that was baloney. We were there because of the Bush administration's desire to punish after 9/11. So women were just became a nice afterthought. I don't believe that was our goal. If it was, we'd be going into other places right now to help women who are subjugated. That's just propaganda after the fact.
Well, it may be, but I don't agree with you.
If I were the president, I would call a meeting of NATO or some other group with allies and decide what's our interest here. How do we neutralize? How do we get rid of it? What are our goals and how do we attain it? Knowing that half measures like these airstrikes, periodic airstrikes, and training of the troops in the area do not work. They're expensive, well, and they don't work. Why do we keep doing it?
Okay. I still want to know the answer. Don checks in and says, not to worry. Carly Fiorina says her knowledge of medieval history will help her defeat ISIS. I'd like to know exactly,
alrighty,
what,
then.
Exactly what that is. And they didn't do so well in medieval history either when they tried to discipline the Arabs.
Crusades, yeah.
I think that analogy to Vietnam, it certainly struck me as I was looking at this. And, you know, my area of expertise is not international affairs, and I can admit that, I guess, at this point. But the thing is that I certainly am aware that things are going on, but I thought, wow, it's like Vietnam. Well, it's a quagmire, the quagmire.
Well, Steve just checked in. Steve just checked in, Barbara, and said, did Rosemary just draw a moral equivalency between the U.S. waterboarding terrorist suspects and a radical Islamist burning a Syrian pilot alive in a cage?
In many ways, it's worse because Americans do not believe in torture. That's not the American way. It was done secretly. The legal path to it was very tangled. In many ways, it's worse. It goes against all of our values.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years. From digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com. Washington County Tourism, featuring fall foliage activities, including Tour de Vine Bike and Wine Tour, music venues, farmers market, and U-Picks throughout Washington County, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Emma Willard School, a boarding and day high school for girls, working to foster their intellect, character, and moral strength in an effort to serve and shape the world. EmmaWillard.org. And McTeague and McClellan, featuring the Flora Collection of Engagement and Wedding Rings, studio and showroom in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. MC2Jewels.com.
There was a peaceful town called Rockbridge, where people lived in harmony. Trouble. There was no hint of misery. The town saloon was always lively, but never nasty or obscene. Behind the bar stood Adel Johnson. He always kept things nice and clean. Once the trouble started, a pack of murderers and thieves.
Oh, Rockridge. Blazing Saddles playing some music this morning. Mel Brooks in town tonight at Proctor's, and going to be presenting a beautiful copy of Blazing Saddles, and be taking questions, and it should be quite a night. We welcome your comments, roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org, and we welcome your comments on all of these issues that we are talking about. Let's take a couple more letters, and then we'll go to BBC News, and then we'll come back with more stuff.
Well, David Kay says, ISIS is winning because they get millions in stolen oil and other assets each day. Not really too poor. They rule with suicide bombings and intimidation. Same ideology of Hamas and the other crazy Muslim terrorists. That's what he says. By the way, anybody wants to just, you know, and like that, Well, there's one here. To quote John Kerry when he was an anti-Vietnam War protester, how do you ask someone to be the last American die for a mistake? The same can be said about Afghanistan, 14 years and counting, two more plus years will do nothing. It's not more training the Afghans needed, it's the lack of will to fight. Bring the troops home, and it's Jim, a veteran, who says that. A
lot of sense in that.
And that, unless you have something I don't have, Joe, is what I got.
That seems good. You know, I was, in talking about the New York Times, they have some really incredible diagrams and maps and charts of looking at the last 14 years and what has been accomplished and what has not been accomplished over that period of time. And if you, we were talking about homework yesterday, but if you want to do some homework and look at this and get an idea of exactly Well, it strikes me as treading water a lot of the time.
So what's your takeaway from what you saw in the New York Times?
Well, I mean, it's just what it gives you is they put it in the maps of this area of how it has basically that over 14 years we have accomplished little or nothing, and then we have circled around.
And spent a lot of money and lost a lot of American lives. And it's just to do what Alan said, so the president can say to his enemies and allies, here's what I'm doing. I'm not doing nothing.
Well,
nothing would be better.
I think you put a face on it in terms of my remarks that are a little bit distorted for change. The reason I said that is because I don't think the president is doing it only because of his political opposition. I think he's doing it because from a policy point of view, he's imprisoned in this thing and he doesn't know what to do. Otherwise, you can't just say, well, it doesn't matter if they take over the entire country and they subject it to Sharia law and they do all of that stuff. I don't agree with that. I think that either we stand for human rights in some cases or we don't. I'm so sorry.
Wow, sounds just like LBJ. Well, just substitute communism for the extremism. It's the exact same argument. And you're a historian. You should know. We should have learned from that. It is Vietnam again.
Without the huge buildup of troops.
Exactly. So far.
It was pretty large, Barbara, for a while there.
She's saying now we don't have that buildup. Right, yeah, it's relatively small now. Right. But those are, 5,000 men once he's out of office whose lives are in danger because they're there in a fight that we're not really fighting to win.
Well, as Cuomo used to say, post hoc, prop hoc, it's easy for us to say, or for me to say right now, tell you the truth, that, LBJ was all wrong because, obviously, the Vietnamese folks who were running things after we got out were more than willing to be compromising with us, whereas I don't know that the ISIS people ever will do that. It's the best I can do for you. I can't do any more. I wish I could. Go Mets.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have more spirited conversation like we just witnessed. And we will welcome your letters as well. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. And we would love to hear from you. Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, Alan Chartok. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments. And we'll be back after this short break. Remember when Count Basie was in Blazing Saddles?
Boy.
That great scene? Yeah. Great stuff. So playing April in Paris? Good stuff. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Barbara Smith, and your letters, roundtable@WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. Let's get to a few letters, and then we have many, many, many other things to discuss.
Just so you'll know, keep your topic sentences hot. Because that's what's going to get read, not the development. Yeah. Okay. I love Rosemary, says Deborah. She's on point when it comes to U.S. involvement in Afghanistan. I learned in my global issues class that the U.S. only goes where there is an interest in discussing their absence in the Rwanda genocide, and I wonder what interests keep them in there. Okay. And that's from Deborah. And Michael says, please don't get stuck on the Vietnam analogy. Just because these conflicts are like Vietnam doesn't mean they have to be. We must get out. The Afghans and Iraqis have no nationalistic ideology to drive them because we invented their states out of tribal lands using Western ethnocentrism. The solution must come from within.
That's a really good letter.
Great letter.
Okay.
Yeah,
and Gregory says, Rosemary, you are killing me. Love how you want to send troops on the ground. Easy for you to say. You ain't going to have your behind on the line. I just changed the word. On the line. You'll be in Albany sipping coffee, bullying everyone on the round table, and not letting them get in a word edgewise. Go, Bernie. Burn, baby, burn. I'm sorry.
No comment.
Okay. Joseph says, I think it's impossible to realize what it means to be a military member. Your life, person, as well as patriotism, belong to the interests of the U.S. government. You do fight as you're told, and if you're fortunate enough, you come home to reflect on your choice. The president did exactly what the troops entrusted him to do. Thank you, fellow veteran. Okay. And hi, panel. We've been there for 14 years, said Jill. We want to train the Afghan army. The Afghans want us to stay, fight their battles for them. We've been there for 14 years. Republicans would have us stay indefinitely until we win. Obama is buying into that. We can't win. We've been out there for 14 years. Let's just get the H out. Okay. And Goody says, Have the Democratic candidates said what they would do regarding Afghanistan if there are still troops when they hopefully take off? Don says, ISIS will be defeated only when the Arab League of Nations unites to fight terrorism. Allen and company, Rosemary is wrong. Our reason for going to Afghanistan was to depose the Taliban and defeat al-Qaeda. We've helped Afghanistan establish a functional government. We chased al-Qaeda out of Afghanistan and seriously weakened whatever. Jorley says, Allen is right. It's not like Vietnam. It's worse. It's the longest, quote, war in our history, and we have no plan on when or how to get out. We keep sending troops, and who is in any of this really helping? And Jeannie says, maybe we're still in Afghanistan because Afghanistan is rich in rare earth metals. According to NBC, they have over 1 trillion of the stuff that makes our iPhones and electronic world go. Seems more like a humanitarian U.S. foreign policy. And Bonnie says, panel, how many of this panel willing to reinstate our military draft when all of our children are in danger? This country's decisions on war commitment changes.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that theory, and it's horrifying. As the mother of sons, I certainly did not like the draft, but we did care more about wars and paid more attention when we were fully invested. Now, as Barbara talks about, our soldiers are overwhelmingly members of a class that needs the money that comes from being a soldier, right. Not that they have special ideals.
Mm. Michael says, I agree 100% with Rosemary. If we cared so much about women, why can't we have equal pay here? Why are we not in Saudi Arabia, where women are treated worse than cattle? Alan's argument is why we should stay. It's weak. 14 years, untold amounts of blood and treasure, and we've no tangible successes, Michael. I don't think I was arguing the pro-stay, although I can see how it's seen that way. I was just saying I understood where the president was coming from and why he was doing what he's doing. Okay. And some guy wrote me about free flower pots. Okay. And then...
meaning that we need to release them, or he's giving them to you for no money?
No, he's giving them to people
okay.
on our hill.
I see.
Free. Okay. Alan, the Congo's seemingly endless conflict showed us what to do. Leave them alone and fight it out, and eventually war fatigue sets in, and open conflict drifts into sullen truth. Bob from Albany. Oh, boy. And John says, Rosemary is always the voice of reason. Madness is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. And George says...
Like that.
What?
That's a good one.
Yeah, it is. George said, evidently we burned a few people to death by bombing that hospital in Kunduz, which is true. The BBC, by the way, did a terrific job on that this morning. Terrific job. They had the head of the organization that ran the hospital. You know,
Doctors Without Borders.
Well, it has a different name.
French, that's all. What do you think? That is
San Frontera.
The name. It's just in French.
In French. Mm-hmm. See, I should have studied harder when I was reading The Little Prince. Okay, that's all I got.
Well,
okay.
You know what I'd like to say? I'm thinking about Malala, who got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes.
I'd love to hear what she would say about this. I mean, not that we would necessarily be able to find out, but, you know, that's somebody who has that kind of view, and she's from the region, and she's incredibly phenomenal, you know.
Absolutely. The documentary out about her, by the way.
Yes, it's here.
Incredible, yeah. It's
quite
amazing.
Colleen, I just want you to know, said, I always thought I was nonpartisan. Thanks to Rosemary's ridiculous opinions of ISIS versus U.S., I'm realizing I'm more of a conservative.
We definitely disagree. I don't think the United States has any moral ground over ISIS. Our methods are different. Certainly our traditions are different about the treatment of human life, but what we're doing is not right.
All right, let's move on to some other issues. I was going to save that for the end, but if you want to do that now, we can do that.
Okay. Can we do it now? Because it's very important.
Okay, I know you really love when we do sports stories.
Well, I have a sociological view on this.
Okay.
Okay, you got two teams.
So the Mets clinched last night.
Right.
They're going to the series, not to the World Series, but to the Division Series with
the
Chicago Cubs.
The Cubs.
Okay, New York Mets, Chicago Cubs.
Okay, now the Cubbies are the Cinderella team, let's face
it. Yeah.
You may be here in New York and you may say, okay, the Mets, but the Cubbies haven't won in 107 years, something like that.
Ever.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So therefore... That's the Cinderella team, the Zeitgeist, the American sociology. You know, they're going to say, okay, everybody's for the Cubbies because it's not, we don't, and people don't necessarily like New York, okay? So the Cubbies are going to be the national favorite, in my opinion.
Yeah.
The Metsies, of course, Ray Graff's, team, and mine, too. I want the Metsies to win. And so I just want you to know this is a matter of does the national opinion permeate the way in which things happen. Now, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I think that that's why the Cubbies are going to win.
Okay. Because they're going to be, I'm sorry.
Because American sociology will permeate the contest and go into the ears and hearts of the players.
So they'll be buoyed up by the spirit of, yes.
That's okay. Almost too nice to me, Barbara. It's even more confused than that.
But I understand your point. My only question is, wouldn't it have been something? I mean, we saw this obviously with Boston several years ago when they finally won after the curse and all of that.
Yeah.
But wouldn't you think that spirit would have come, you know, other times during the season where people, you know, for a long time, I think people have had the Cubs in their hearts of, it would be nice to see them go.
Well, Joe, that's very well put, except that there are some things that haven't never forgive. Selling the Bambino to the Yankees was something that the Red Sox would have to pay for forever. And by the way, the Statler brothers immortalized this because they said the best singing group that ever was, as you probably know. They did a song about when a guy would return to his wife or the wife would return to the husband. And they had one line in there which just went to show everything.
When the lights go on at Wrigley Field, I'll be coming home to you.
When the lights go on at Wrigley Field, I'll be coming home to you. And, of course, they did. So now the Cubbies are in it.
They are indeed. The game will take place, the first game of the seven-game series, or what could be a seven-game series, will take place on Saturday night at 8 o'clock.
Okay, that's all I had to say about
that. Okay, great. We got everything in? That's good. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have some other stories to talk about. We'll talk a little bit about campaign politics, and we'll get your letters on that as well. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Amtrak. Fall foliage trips aboard the Adirondack's Great Dome Car, with windows on all sides and overhead, from Albany to Montreal, with stops throughout New York's North Country. Amtrak.com for reservations. Windy Hill Farm Nursery, Orchard, and Garden Shop, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Offering fresh-picked and pick-your-own apples from their orchard and their own unpasteurized natural sweet cider blend. WindyHillFarmInc.com. And Albany Marriott, with 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space, with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com.
Was Pan the goddess of desire, set men on fire. I have this power. Morning, noon, and night, it's drink and dancing, some quick romancing, and then a shower. Stage door Johnny's constantly surround me. They always hound me with one request. Who can satisfy their lustful habit? I'm not a rabbit. I need some rest. I'm tired, sick and tired of love.
If there's one actress I miss, it's Madeline Kahn, taken from us far too early, died of cancer in 1999. But that was an amazing performance in Blazing Saddles. Of course, she was in Young Frankenstein as well. Always worked very, very well with Mel Brooks, but that was an amazing performance. And it was her birthday last week.
Oh.
And so it's nice to play that this morning.
You know that.
All right. Let's go. Not right.
No, I am. I'm very impressed.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. So let's go.
Why is it that you always think everything I say has a sort of a negative slant to
because
it?
Because it does.
because I've worked with you for 21 years.
Well, as the Mel Brooks says, well, in the Argentinian coffee house, and the guy's really a Nazi, and he says, "Well, I don't think you're an Argentinian cattle raiser at all. I think you're a Nazi." Well, you found me out.
And on that note, let's go to there's been some interesting articles that have taken place over the last couple of days regarding the Republican and Democratic debates. And the topics that are being discussed, racial justice and gender equality, issues important to a large and increasingly vocal block of the national electorate, made it to the presidential debate stage in Tuesday's face-off between the candidates for the Democratic nomination. The willingness of the Democratic candidates to embrace these issues on a national stage, along with references to their support on paid family leave, LGBT rights, and health coverage, and in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants, indicates that they are trying to keep pace with their party's base. The Democrats also set a clear contrast with the Republican counterparts, whose inflammatory rhetoric on social issues could make it difficult for the GOP to appeal to a broader electorate in next year's general election.
Oh, can I go?
Yes.
What's that guy in Welcome Back, Carter?
Arnold Horshack, played by the late Ron Palillo.
He's late already?
I feel like I'm in a game of trivia. Don't you, Barbara?
This I feel like I'm in another dimension.
I know. We need to, like, memorize some movies and call them next
He's deceased.
Yesterday, I was thoroughly beaten up by the panel on the question of who won the debate. And everybody assured me, since the New York Times had it in three front-page stories.
Oh, man. That, talk about distorting what was said, Alan.
Well, no, you beat me up. It was quite bad, and I felt very badly. I walked around with my head down all day long. But today, I'm getting all this email about how CNN did a poll during the thing, an online poll, and how the massive group thought that Bernie won. The Washington Post thought that Bernie won and the others. I just wanted to say that.
What is he reading?
So can we talk about...
Yeah, the issue.
No, that's condescending. No, I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
That's condescending too.
Yeah. So what?
Well, you found me out.
Okay. So Barbara, I think you wanted to be on topic.
Well,
that's condescending also.
Speechless. I'm speechless. I think it is. It's really interesting the divide between the two parties and how they see these issues. One uses it. Uses them for inflammatory rhetoric to solidify their base, and then the other one actually talks about something approaching social and economic justice. So it's just really
also to solidify their base, though,
yes.
Barbara.
Yes, oh sure, yes. But the thing is, it's just like it's alternate world, and I think the article made the point that it's like they're living. People are living in two different Americas. This is not, you know, in the story that we were going to discuss, but. I want to ask you, what is this thing about Mike Huckabee invoking Dred Scott? I heard that he'd invoked Dred Scott, and I thought it had something to do with racial issues. I didn't have a chance to look it up. Turns out he was invoking Dred Scott to defend Kim Davis around homophobia. I said, oh, great. So he's using Dred Scott.
I think his point was that the Supreme Court has made bad decisions before, and we grow out of them. So he thinks that the decision on marriage.
And it's still the law of the land.
Yeah, it's the law of the land, but it isn't going to be forever. So we should act now as
so
if it
Dred
isn't.
Scott is parallel to a lesbian and gay marriage. Okay.
Yeah, the same. I'm surprised you don't see that,
okay,
Barbara.
So let's then talk about the content of the story. I don't know what there is to say it's because it's so apparent, that there are very different perspectives. I think it's really always positive when this particular country looks at racial issues and racial, oppression and also gender.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you think about that debate, the point in the debate where do Black Lives Matter? What did you think was really going on there, Barbara?
You mean like from the questioners?
Yeah.
It certainly is something. I didn't see the debate.
Oh, okay.
I was, I watched commentary afterwards.
I mean, I can't imagine that anybody who was up there, the question was, do Black Lives Matter?
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine anybody who was up on that stage who was going to say, no, Black Lives don't matter.
Well, it was actually a direct confrontation with both Bernie and Hillary, who in the past have said all lives matter, or they backed away from really supporting the Black Lives Matter. They took criticism.
It was Martin O'Malley who said all lives matter.
You're right.
Matter.
It was three of them. Yeah.
I don't know that Hillary Clinton and
Hillary always said she sided
Bernie,
with them.
I don't know that.
Then Bernie had gotten into the early skirmish with the group I forget where it was.
There were people protesting. His appearances.
Yeah, his questionable response was to invoke his civil rights history.
Right.
That's what people took offense to.
And during the debate, he said that Black Lives Matter. Yeah.
I didn't take offense to him talking about his civil rights history because I think it might have been actually a revealing of fact unknown to those who were criticizing him. But the thing is that he's really grown, you know, around these issues and has met with them and has also, you know, from my understanding, has actually hired someone who's affiliated with Black Lives Matter. And I think that what Secretary Clinton says has also been positive. It's just really hard to talk about issues of racial justice in an electoral political context during a presidential, you know, year. That's not where you find the real answers, I don't think.
I'm fascinated, Barbara, by when you say he's really grown, because, you know, I suspect, knowing Bernie and knowing him fairly well, that he was on the civil rights marches and the other stuff when they were happening. But every one of these candidates, when beaten up for something or other, quote, grows. In other words, they react to the stimulus that's going on around them. Now, it's not to say Bernie's a phony, because he's not.
Oh, no.
But you have to you have to react in a particular way so as to satisfy, you know, the people who don't like what you're saying.
What I meant by grown, and as I said, I thought I had no problems with him talking about his civil rights history.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I bet there are a lot of people who were born, you know, 50 years, you know, after all of that occurred. 40 or 50 years after all of that occurred, who don't even know that that's the case, that he was that committed. When I said that he had grown, I meant that he is more responsive to the actual zeitgeist and the nuances of this particular historical period in relationship to issues of race. That's what I mean by grown. He has better answers, better, you know, responses, public ones. I'm not talking about his heart, because I don't think his heart has changed. It didn't have to. You know, he's been anti-racist since, you know, his young days, as far as I can determine. I don't know him at all. But the thing is that what he's grown in is being able to articulate a position in relationship to what's going on politically among those who are organizing against extrajudicial killings, etc. He has better answers. That's what I meant by grown.
I think it's interesting to look at the difference between the Republican and the Democratic debates, both all of which I've watched, and to look at how they treat social issues and issues of social justice. The Republicans were, when we mentioned marijuana, for example, legalization, they were all against it, which doesn't go with what's happening in ideas, you know, among the people. When was gay marriage, same thing. Abortion, same thing. They seem so disconnected from where public opinion is going these days. And then on social justice, they were much more supportive of the police. The only time I saw that in the Democratic debate was when they asked about pardon or amnesty for Edward Snowden. And then they took a really tough position that we have to be, you know, he broke the law, he has to go back and pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, there was a clear divide between the two parties.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that I don't know what will work in the election this year, but as we go further out, as young people come more into power,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I don't see how the Republicans are positioning them to win those people.
And then you have Ben Carson rising in the polls and raising incredible amounts of money. In the last quarter, it is just – it's such a disconnect of here's somebody who is African-American born and living in the United States, and he articulates such a hard right position that the evangelicals, et cetera, are just right with him.
Mm.
It's very confusing because it's like the Clarence Thomas effect.
That's exactly
in some ways.
What I was going to say.
Yep.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that we've had several letters.
We have time for letters, let's go.
One was Eric, who said, I love that you're – oh, no, that was different. This was a lot of people commented basically that the question was, do Black lives matter or do all lives matter? That was the question that was asked on Facebook.
No, I understand.
And I just want to point that out. Good morning, panel, says Mark. What do you think would happen if Blazing Saddles was created today in 2015? Do you think Mel Brooks would be called a racist in today's politically correct climate?
Mel Brooks has said in this year that he would not be able to make this film today, but he also said in 1972, when he was making the film, that he was called a racist because of the content at the time. So, but he said that at least the studio stood beside him after yelling at him, and now they would not.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I remember the very thing we're talking about here. Okay, so is Rosemary confused? We went to Iraq to punish, Afghanistan to stop Osama bin Laden, who was being sheltered there from continuing attacks on us like 9/11.
I just have to say something now that I understand fully what the question was that was asked.
Yeah.
Do Black Lives Matter?
Yeah.
Are matter? Are do all lives matter? Those are not mutually exclusive.
That's
it
right.
Shouldn't be or. There should not be any or there. Black people are alive as well. We have lives. We're humans, etc. So to oppose Black lives versus everybody else's lives, that's just wrong. It had a fault within the question, you know.
Well, you know, Jeff wrote and said, what do you guys do, smoke a bunch of pot this morning? Jeez. That's what he said.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, he means he didn't like what we were saying.
Is that what that means? I don't know that that's what that means.
Okay, right. Yeah.
We're talking about the Mets. We're giggling over Blazing Saddles. Right. We're not being serious.
I
really have a need for cheese doodles right now. So.
Oh, yeah,
maybe.
Okay. Greg says, Alan will most likely skim over... I would be curious to see if a life loss and financial cost comparison between all-out war situation and long-term peacekeeping missions. Diplomacy works when both parties are interested in compromise in situations led by passions and ideology. Who is realistically going to compromise?
That's a good letter.
And then, well, I don't know. And then Chris wrote and said... may you also comment on which candidate were allowed into the Democratic debate? And he's writing about the candidate Lessig. You know, we get a lot of mail from people who are big Lessig fans. I'm just telling you that. Don't look at me that way.
I know. It's a big debate within the media community is how to do these debates. Does the media not do their duty when they put 11 candidates up at a time or 5 candidates up at a time when what we really need, some say, is a debate between Bernie and Hillary? I don't know the answer to that. I'm just sort of looking at it. I didn't want to hear from the other three. But why is that? Does that mean I'm anti-democratic and I don't want to hear other ideas?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I just don't want to waste 2 hours listening. I don't really care, honestly, about Chaffee. I want to hear more from even Bernie.
One more?
Sure.
One more very quickly. Hi, panel. Although I appreciate Rosemary's passion, her comparison between Vietnam and Afghanistan is hollow to the core. The Vietnamese did not hate everything American. Ho Chi Minh and the North Vietnamese were not terrorists, as we understand the term today, and they did not intend to destroy Israel. Alan was right. Obama made an adult decision based both on sound political realities and the service of human rights. That's what he said.
And we're out of time.
Okay.
Okay. Alan and Rosemary and Barbara, thank you very much for being with us. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.